Yeah. What a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning. Haven't had the saddles on the horses for a couple weeks. Been on the road. Good to be home. It's about the perfect temperature out there right now.
Oh. Can we open the windows?
Oh, I wish. I hope all of you at home can open your windows. Go ahead and pour that first cup of coffee or hot tea. Open the windows and listen to the birds. Here we go. Yes. That's a nice Saturday morning right there.
You gonna sing for us?
We're gonna keep it a nice Saturday morning. You're listening. You're tuned in. In case you didn't know it, you're tuned in to Rosie on the House, and we'd like to wish you a great big Arizona Saturday morning. Good morning. Rosie on the House, a Saturday morning tradition for Arizona homeowners for 29 years. Crank it up, baby. It sounds good. Easter weekend. Shame, shame, shame on Rosie. You know, folks, when we put the show together, we actually look months ahead. It may not always sound like that, but we look.
It doesn't always work. We try.
We look months ahead, and we think, well, what would be interesting on this day and that day and this day and that day? And it occurred to us back in about November, wow, we're going to be broadcasting on April 15th. Oh, that reminds me, it's James' birthday tomorrow. April 15th, tax day. Well, let's just do a show on the history of income taxes in America. That'll be an uplifting topic for everyone to tune into early on a Saturday morning. And it wasn't until like 3 weeks ago I realized we're going to talk taxes on Easter weekend. This is Rosie's fault, y'all. You just need to know that, and I sincerely apologize to you all. But who else could I invite in to make the topic of the history of income taxes interesting other than Assistant Professor of History from Grand Canyon University, the one and only Dr. David Dean?
Good
Thank
morning.
You, sir, for joining us.
Good morning, Rosie. It's good to be here again.
So do you forgive? I didn't know I was going to take you away from your family on Easter weekend. I really apologize for that, man.
It's okay. We'll do the Easter egg roll later on.
Okay. All right. The history of income tax. Da-da bing, bada boom. Let's start with this. Why aren't the taxes due on Monday?
Well, taxes aren't due on Monday because tax day falls on Saturday this year.
So it's the first business day after the weekend is Monday.
The first business day is Monday, but in Washington, D.C., it's actually a holiday. It's the Emancipation Day.
I bet it is.
any excuse, right? Oh, in 1862, the Compensation Emancipation Act in Washington, D.C. was passed, which freed
You're not pulling my leg. This is a real thing.
Real thing. Freed about 3,100 slaves and compensated those slave owners there in the District of Columbia in 1862. And so they celebrate that day as Emancipation Day in Washington, D.C. It is a city holiday. And so nobody goes to work on Monday, and so tax day is moved to Tuesday, the 18th this year.
It's another topic, but how many holidays do you think they have in D.C.?
I don't know.
How many days off?
I don't know. So that's, I just thought it was like a miscalculation of the calendar or something.
No.
Emancipation Day.
Yeah. It's, okay. From the Compensated Emancipation Act of 1862.
They've had annual celebration since 1862?
Yes, they sponsor parades. Today they're having a memorial service for African-American soldiers that served in the war. They'll have a wreath laying at the memorial, and they have a series of kind of events and things all celebrating the moment.
I wonder if the 18th is the latest it's ever been actually due since the 15th has been set.
Probably,
because
I can't think of any other holidays that would intervene.
So we have Emancipation Day, Tax Day, and Easter all converging on this one weekend.
And some would say that taxes are a liberating way of emancipating your money from you to the federal government.
Some would say that. Some would say that. What is the history of the income tax code?
Well, taxes were part of our Civil War history, American Civil War. Lincoln in 1862 realizes that the war's costing a lot of money, and so they put forward the creation of a Commissioner of Internal Revenue, and the Bureau of Internal Revenue were created in July of 1862 to raise money to help pay for the war. And it was basically about 3% on income over $800 a year annually, which in that time would have been a lot of
I was going to say, how many people back then were making that?
That would have represented about 5 to 8% of the population.
Wow.
In the North.
Wow. That's incredible. And the tax rate was what?
3% of that $800 or more. Now, there are people that were making more than $800 that would have paid more than, you know, more. The 3% would have been more net. But it was designed to just raise money for the war. By 1872, it's kind of phased out and pretty much disappeared because people really don't like being taxed for no reason at all. So, and then it comes roaring back as a populist movement in the 1890s under Grover Cleveland.
Clay Jansen of Focus Insurance, if you're listening, do a calculation for me and call 1-888-767-4348 and tell me what $800 in 1862 is worth today. What in today's dollars is that worth? He always does those formulas for me. So if he's listening, maybe he can call Romy. Romy's in the call screener booth over there. Clay, if you're listening, give us a ring. Let us know what that's worth in today's dollars. So taxes have been in place since the Civil War.
So much so. Like I said, in 1872, they were phased out, pretty much eliminated. The federal government's not collecting that anymore. And then in 1892, Grover Cleveland, President Cleveland, proposed as a populist initiative to kind of regulate tariffs and bring in more revenue to the government, a income tax again. But that was on incomes of $4,000 and more. It would have been a 2% tax, a flat tax.
And Grover Cleveland, so that's early 1900s.
1894.
Okay.
And the legislation that goes forward is the okay, well, I thought I had it here. It's the the Wilson-Gorman.
I know you do.
The Wilson-Gorman Tariff Act. And again, it was designed to regulate tariffs on products, particularly, cotton in the South and oil in the North and
but
these kind of things.
But that's not an income tax.
No, it's a tariff, but because they knew they weren't going to get these tariffs really fully passed and they still wanted income for the federal government, so they added on this provision for a flat tax on income. And what ended up happening was the tariff portions of the bill all got gutted, and only the tax portion, the income tax portion, remained. And so that went into place, and then later on it becomes the foundation of the 16th Amendment, which is passed in 1913 to establish the actual federal government can pass and do these income tax things.
Now, you know, Dr. Dean, I've been in contracting here in the Valley for a long time. So I've known a lot of subcontractors. And one in particular, the best tile contractor I've ever had in the history of my entire company, spent months trying to convince me the income tax was not constitutional and no one had to pay it.
Well, it was actually ruled unconstitutional in Pollock v. Farmers Loan and Trust Company in 1865.
Ooh.
So
those were the good old days.
Yeah, so it was ruled unconstitutional because
Who ruled it that way?
The Supreme Court.
Well, God bless them.
Technically, taxes are supposed to be collected in proportion to state populations, is how the tax originally was. But
I'm moving to Montana or Wyoming.
But as it turns out, later on, when the Congress passed and the country ratified the income tax 16th Amendment, the Supreme Court ruled that now the government can levy a direct tax without proportion to population, and so therefore it was constitutional after that.
That is kind of the irony of law by judges. It is kind of subjective. It kind of evolves with the times?
Well, it's a living constitution, so it has to be adaptive, and yet still remain fair and have that kind of longevity of consistency.
Well, he tried to convince me for months that it was unconstitutional. He wasn't going to pay, so I shouldn't pay. And then one day he was hauled off one of our jobs. Wow. And I think he's still in the big house today.
Really? In the pokey? Probably for not paying his taxes.
Yeah.
The federal government doesn't take a liking to people who don't pay their taxes.
Yeah, they don't handle that very well. But you know what? I had occasion earlier in 2016, I had to get onto the IRS webpage. And folks, if you want to just get a little giggle here Saturday morning, because the topic of taxes could be very demoralizing to many of you, and I don't want to do that. If you want a little giggle, just go to irs.gov, and you will see pictures of the happiest people you've ever seen. You would think that this was a website for unicorns and rainbows. They are all smiling. You see all their pearly whites. There's a twinkle in every one, a sparkle in every one of their eyes.
What I picture when I think of people sitting behind the IRS desk. And here's a really helpful headline in the website as well. $1 billion in unclaimed tax refunds. Now, that should make you happy.
That'll make you happy. Look at the guy. The tab says, pay your tax bill. Now, does that guy look like that? He really does look like that. He looks like he just got, like, the best Christmas gift ever.
I think they took those pictures from the Publisher's Clearinghouse website.
Maybe they did. That's exactly what it looks like. Well, we're here with Dr. David Dean, Assistant Professor of History at Grand Canyon University, and we're talking about the history of the tax code. And I asked for my good friend Clay Jansen of Focus Insurance to do a quick calculation for us. He may or may not be in town. If you can tell us what today's – how am I going to word this – $800 was the beginning tax rate in 1862.
Uh-huh.
Okay, $800. What was $800 in 1862? What's that $800? What's that number today? The current equivalency of that $800. Somebody do that calculation and call us at 1-888-767-4348.